For the longest time, I think up to the time when I was 8 or 9, we didn't even have manufactured soap in the house. It was herbal powders and scrubs and wow. homemade loofahs and, you know, all of those things which are very natural. And today,
very expensive. Expensive. I was just gonna
say. And each of these things would be considered Ayurvedic practices on specific times of the year or months or on a festival. There used to be herbs which used to be steeped in the bath water, like neem baths, for example, were very popular because it used to function like an antiseptic or an anti-inflammatory.
Right.
So I think I just grew up with all of these things, and then we always used to get fed by, I remember my grandmom giving us like these specially made potions in a way.
Yeah.
Not very tasty, but it would just warm you up during winter times. And so I think I followed a lot of that practice already.
With me in the studio is Mahesh Natarajan. Mm-hmm. He is the COO of Ananda, which is a retreat or yes. That is located in the Himalayas.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
We're going to get into that. But before we get into it, I think you're very interesting. And I was, as we were speaking and as I read up on your bio, I found out that you are actually a yoga fanatic.
Practitioner.
Practitioner. Let's say, yeah. You also, you have a passion for Ayurveda.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that you've been passionate about for quite some time. And I know you've been in the field for quite some time. So my question is, did you get into it because of the field, or did you get into the field because of your passion? So it's like the chicken or the egg kind of situation. Yeah.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Maria. It's great to be here.
Lovely having you.
And that's, I think I get asked that a lot of the time because of my really long association with Ananda.
Okay.
I've been working with and kind of leading now Ananda for almost 15 years.
Amazing.
I think it's a bit of both. Definitely the knowledge that I've been getting at Ananda, diving deep into Ayurveda and yoga, not just these two, but a whole lot of other holistic practices. It's just kept kindling my interest in these. And then once you start scratching the surface, you realize that, you know, most people don't even know that there's such a wealth of knowledge, and it kind of changes the way you, if you bring it into your life, it can change the way you live it. And as I've discovered that personally for me, it's definitely built that up. But I think the beginnings were already there.
Okay.
From my childhood. Mm. I come from the southern part of India in Chennai, and from quite a traditional family in terms of traditional practices, not traditional in terms of views, quite a progressive family, but a very traditional family in terms of the way we used to practice just things at home, home remedies, things that we used to, rituals that we used to do on important festivals and all of those. And I didn't know it at that time, but I think a lot of what I was doing even then, today would be considered Ayurvedic practices.
Amazing.
For the longest time, I think up to the time when I was 8 or 9, we didn't even have manufactured soap in the house. It was herbal powders and scrubs and
wow.
homemade loofahs and, you know, all of those things which are very natural. And today,
expensive. I was just gonna say.
And each of these things would be considered Ayurvedic practices on specific times of the year or months or on a festival. There used to be herbs which used to be steeped in the bath water, like neem baths, for example, were very popular because it used to function like an antiseptic or an anti-inflammatory.
Right.
So I think I just grew up with all of these things, and then we always used to get fed by, I remember my grandmom giving us like these specially made potions in a way.
Yeah.
Not very tasty, but it would just warm you up during winter times. And so I think I followed a lot of that practice already.
Mm-hmm.
I think my passion for Ayurveda just really started growing the more I learned more about it the first time I came into Ananda. And the first couple of years, I really feel I was more of an observer.
Okay.
And then when I started thinking about how logical it all is, how simple it is to actually understand it, and once you apply it, what a difference it can make, that point onwards, I think I've just dove right through and started building it into my own personal life. And I think that's probably brought me to this point. And I have to say, similarly with yoga, again, my early background from my tradition, family tradition, has been with a lot of music and classical music. And with that comes a lot of mantras and these recitations,
right.
Which we always had at home. And that's always kind of connected me with that part of yoga. Mm. But learning what we do now at Ananda, which is a very traditional classical form of yoga, Hatha yoga and Raja yoga for meditation, mm-hmm. it's kind of connected, but I think it just brought it up to the fore. So
okay.
It's kind of a chicken and egg, I would say. Okay. But definitely in my case, both have worked hand in hand. It's quite a tandem situation.
I feel like it was innate.
Absolutely.
I feel like you were just born into it.
Yeah.
And it's like your calling. It's right. like you've actually, you know, fulfilled your calling at a later stage in life, but you started
absolutely.
It. At such an early age.
Yeah. So today, one of the practices that I really brought into my personal life in a big, big way is our mantras.
Okay.
And again, people across the world don't really understand or apply it that much, or they feel that it could be something which is just like om chanting, for example, or something mm-hmm. maybe a little religious, but it's actually not. It's just sound vibrations which connect with each of our chakras.
Right.
And then when you're able to do that, it just balances and makes you whole and allows you to have a free flow of energy and consciousness.
Right.
But I can completely relate to that because I spent a whole lot of my childhood listening to people who were reciting and chanting these mantras. Mm. So today when I'm sitting at Ananda and I'm learning, I consider myself as a lifelong practitioner and seeker.
Mm.
You mentioned expert. I'm nowhere near that. I'm just a practitioner.
Yeah.
It just feels natural. It doesn't feel like I'm doing something which I wasn't kind of already set out to do.
Right. I mean, it's funny that you were mentioning chanting and, you know, the mantras and how sound is part, like the vibrations and the sounds are part of the healing process.
Yeah.
I was just telling you before the show that I did this sound bath healing class.
Of course.
And I remember like that day, it's actually like, I think it's funny, but because at the time when the instructor was saying, you know, be very sensitive with yourself mm-hmm. after the class, you know, you've released a lot of toxins.
Yeah.
These vibrations allow you to release all these toxins and all these negative feelings
yeah.
that you might not be aware of. So be very sensitive with yourself. And I actually went home and I sobbed and I didn't know why. And
absolutely.
I just had no idea why that happened. But I mean, I truly believe that it was part of that class, that healing process that happened in the class.
And, oh, for sure.
And it's beautiful. And it's beautiful because she also said, bring your water because these vibrations get transferred, you know,
very
to your
true.
Water. Get,
yeah.
get your water bottle with you. Drink from that water
yeah.
for the rest of the night. So it's absolutely beautiful. And I think
I think these are all, at some level, almost you can think of them as cosmic sounds.
Right.
And we don't fully understand why they vibrate the way they do.
Right.
But as a part of my personal practice, I do it early in the morning.
Mm.
And I'm telling you, like the clarity that you get after you do that practice early morning for the rest of the day, it suddenly it opens your mind. Everything is possible.
Wow.
It just, you know, gives you a set of a degree of clarity that you don't normally have otherwise.
Right.
And I
right.
think that's really powerful. So I encourage everybody to learn and hear more about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you said that. And I'm glad that you mentioned as well in the beginning that a lot of people have a misconception that it's religious when
yeah,
really it isn't.
Exactly. No, so, not at all.
Yeah, so that's actually a good transition into
yeah,
what we're about
sure.
to talk about. Maybe just define what Ayurveda is. Like, what is it? I mean, how can it benefit a person
yeah.
mentally and physically, actually?
So Ayurveda, first of all, is a very, very ancient science. It's been written about and documented in the Vedas, which are the oldest literary texts in India, going all the way back about 4,000 to 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It got codified and documented maybe about 3,500 years ago. So it's got a really ancient lineage. It's a very experiential science. It's been passed down through generations, through the millennia. The word Ayurveda comes, it's actually etymology of Ayurveda split into two parts, Ayur and Veda. So Ayu literally means life and Veda is the knowledge.
Wow.
So the very essence of life, the knowledge of life, that's actually what Ayurveda means.
Mm-hmm.
And think of it as a manual for positive living. Something that you use not just as a fix-it. While there are specific Ayurvedic cures,
mm-hmm.
100%. Like, you know, today there are Ayurvedas being used to cure anything from chronic aspects like diabetes to reducing cholesterol to addressing weight to managing stress to a lot more clinical areas that people are struggling with even in allopathy.
Mm-hmm.
But the essence of Ayurveda is really to do with a lot of positive, proactive health.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this knowledge of life. So at its very core, Ayurveda talks about a process called Dinacharya, which is how do you live your daily life? And that by itself is so revealing in terms of the daily processes of how you balance your body, your mind, to what is already the circadian rhythms and the your biological rhythm, the circadian rhythm, and how to bring all of these back into balance. Mm-hmm. So in Ayurveda, the science is really around the fact that each of us consists of various different personalities, various body constitutions, various types of mental and emotional physicalities. Mm-hmm. And when you're able to get all of these in perfect balance, that is then defined in Ayurveda as good health. So, for example, when you go to an Ayurvedic doctor, the physical side of what he's examining, he or she is examining, is just one fraction of the entire assessment process.
Okay.
Because in Ayurveda, the way you are is not, it's very different from the way a medical doctor will examine you. Because in modern medicine, you look at organs and you look at defects and you look at ways to fix that defect in an organ. It's very right. problem solution on an observed basis.
Mm-hmm.
In Ayurveda, there are entire systems which make it what it is. The system is the mental system, the digestive system, the stress system, the mm-hmm. sleep cycle, the level of toxins in your body, even the waste and the elimination system. We don't like to talk about it because it's a sensitive topic
yeah.
to talk about the way you eliminate waste from your system.
Yeah. It's icky.
It's icky.
But still, it's worth addressing.
But in Ayurveda, the you are what you eat, which is now a lot of people are talking about that,
yes.
is progressed even more by talking about you are what you digest.
True.
It is the way you digest it, the way you eliminate your waste, the toxins which are still present in your body. That's the crux of everything which comes down to Ayurveda.
Absolutely.
Today, there's so much talk about the gut brain and how the way you digest impacts your brain because you have a living brain in your gut.
Right.
Ayurveda has always spoken about this.
Yeah.
So in Ayurveda, you have to assess all of these different systems. Nidra, which is sleep. Mala, which is toxins. Koshta, which is elimination of waste.
Mm.
Even your urges, your mental and physical urges have an important aspect in Ayurveda.
Mm-hmm.
An Ayurvedic doctor has an ability to assess who you are, what you are, the way you will be, which is predictive health,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't need gadgets to do this. You can actually, a skilled Ayurvedic doctor will be able to examine your pulse, look at your tongue, look at your face structures, look at everything that you are and ask you a whole lot of questions and be able to come to a conclusion that this is what is out of balance
mm-hmm.
and this is what we need to do. Once you understand that whole psyche, and I'm really simplifying it a lot.
Oh, of course.
Because
yeah,
it's such a vast topic and I'm trying to kind of get it into a nutshell. But essentially, once we understand from an Ayurvedic perspective what your unique body personality is, what your unique mental ability is or emotional aspect is, then all of Ayurveda is trying to make you come back into that state of balance
mm-hmm.
through a couple of specific modalities.
Mm-hmm.
That could be through specific types of massage therapies or manipulation therapies, which are usually done with medicated herbal oils.
Okay.
That's one way. The other way, which is, and these are not exclusive, these are all happening together in Ayurveda. The
okay.
other very important aspect in Ayurveda is cleansing. And when I'm talking about cleansing, I'm not just talking about colonics or water irrigation. These are done with, again, medicated oils and medicated decoctions to really cleanse the entire system before actually doing any of the Ayurvedic massage therapy. So that's
mm-hmm.
another very important aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's an entire program in Ayurveda called Panchakarma,
mm-hmm.
which is a 3-week program that you need to invest in to be able to do this. But in ancient times, people used to do this not only every year, but with every change of season. Because our bodies are changing every time a season changes and you're accumulating toxins, your body is changing, your entire constitution is changing. So unless you reset your entire system, cleanse it and prepare for the next season, you're not in a state of good health. Today, we might not be able to take that time out of 21 days.
I wish, but
at least once a year is yeah. highly recommended for you to cleanse yourself the way an Ayurvedic cleanse works.
Yeah.
And then there is a whole set of herbal supplements and medicines which are used specifically based on what aspect of your physical constitution is out of balance.
Right.
And there are certain supplements which are included in your food on a daily basis just to saturate and to satisfy what your basic body type or dosha. We'll
mm-hmm.
get to that in a minute, I'm sure. But
okay.
what that is, how to pacify that. So then there's a whole lot of supplements and medicines. And the final aspect is on diet.
Mm.
Ayurveda will change the entire way you eat, what you eat, the way you think when you are eating,
mm.
it's a whole different way of addressing what is good for your body and eliminating what is not, and moderating what could be potentially dangerous for your physical self.
Okay.
So there's a whole range of, Ayurveda is not just one aspect, it's a whole range of connected areas.
It's holistic.
It's completely holistic.
Yeah.
And then there is this aspect which I spoke about in the beginning, which is called dinacharya. Dina, day, charya is action. So the actions of the day.
Mm.
What time do you get up? When you get up, what do you do? Depending on your personality. Should I be active when I get up? Should I meditate? Should I plan? Right. What is the time of the day when I should be eating my most balanced meal? What time of the day should I be taking for myself to really focus on some kind of a mindful activity?
Right.
Every single aspect of this has been prescribed in Ayurveda. Not now. Not 10 years ago, 5,000 years ago. All we need to do is actually follow it and guide ourselves, get that knowledge, use that framework to understand and appreciate who we are and apply it to daily lives.
Yes.
Because this today we're bombarded with information about superfood this and super practice that.
Yes.
On a minute-to-minute basis. How do you choose?
Exactly.
You know, you can follow the herd, or you can understand what is good for yourself.
Yes.
And I would say Ayurveda is one of those practices which is probably the most, from a holistic point of view, it's the most comprehensive diagnostic framework that you can use for yourself.
I was just going to say, people are not only bombarded with all this contradicting information.
Absolutely.
So you'll hear one thing on one website, hear another thing from someone on a podcast,
yeah,
and you'll just sit there confused. And not only that, there's so much noise in your life that you no longer know how to listen to your body.
Yeah.
You no longer know how to recognize what works for you and what doesn't.
Yeah.
You've lost touch, you've lost connection.
Absolutely.
With your body, that you just feel like, I don't know how to make myself feel better,
yeah,
anymore. When really, it's very basic.
Correct.
And it's something that our ancestors used to do, as you said,
right,
without gadgets, without
absolutely,
without a watch to tell me how, how fast my heart is,
yeah,
beating, or
exactly,
how many calories I'm burning. Or, I mean, they did this naturally.
Yeah.
And I find that interesting because it is an ancient, medical system, mm-hmm, Ayurveda, but it's still so foreign to so many people.
It is.
Especially outside of India. But I feel like you find the two extremes. You find someone that is passionate about,
yeah,
Ayurveda and knows everything about,
right,
it. Or you find
very
someone
true
that has never heard of it. There isn't that middle ground.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I feel like it's fantastic having you here, because we want to educate people, mm-hmm, on Ayurveda. And B, we want to maybe fix misconceptions around,
sure,
Ayurveda, as we mentioned at the beginning. And C, we want to talk about what you have to offer.
Right.
These are things that we're going to cover.
What you're saying is absolutely true, because if you look at how Ayurveda has expanded across the world, there are, of course, different places offering Ayurveda in many different continents.
Yeah.
The misconception is that Ayurveda can be cherry-picked and just applied, mm, almost like going to a spa,
right,
which is totally not the way it can be.
Yes.
You can't just have an Ayurvedic treatment,
mm,
and then expect to feel something different. Ayurveda is very much of a knowledge process. It's a lived science. It takes time. It's organic,
right,
but it works from the root. So that's one very important thing,
mm-hmm,
that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you said is that there are two extremes in terms of how people react to Ayurveda. Absolutely spot on.
Mm.
I've known clients who've come into Ananda, and the level of knowledge that they will have. For example, if you look at some of the European audiences, maybe the Germanic audiences,
yes,
from East Germany, and those people have been actually getting very deep into the Vedas and the Upanishads, actually dedicating a large part of their lives to studying it, and because that's the level of depth that they,
wow,
have gone into in many, many things. And when they come in and interact at Ananda, it's incredible to see the level of knowledge that they have. But I have to say, here, right here in the Middle East, in places like Dubai, in the UAE, we've had an explosion of people appreciating, understanding, and increasing their knowledge and awareness of Ayurveda. Today, if I look at our key programs like Panchakarma, which is that full-length cleanse, or even a holistic detox using primarily Ayurvedic techniques,
mm-hmm,
some of the biggest clients that we have and the most rapidly growing clients at Ananda are actually coming in from this part of the world.
Amazing.
And I think that's only shows how much of an impact that's making.
Mm-hmm.
Most times they've gone into some another destination or another kind of a practice which might be more rapid acting,
mm-hmm,
but when they've come in for a program like this, usually when they go back, they're saying people are stopping them where they are on the streets or in their family and saying, what happened to you? You've changed. You've changed. Yeah. And that's what happens when you really work from the inside out, right? Yes. The root cause. Yeah. You can do everything that you can cosmetically for the skin, but there is no way you'll be able to replicate the glow that you get after doing a complete Ayurvedic cleanse.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. Oh, man, now I want to try it. But you mentioned that, you know, you see a lot of people coming in from mm-hmm. this part of the world. Do you have any stats? Like, can you tell us?
I can say, for example, that today, of all our international clientele coming into Ananda, around 15% or in that range is coming in specifically from GCC markets.
15.
Yeah, 15%, which is like a big jump.
If you look at our region.
And I think the more interesting stat is what are people doing and how long they are staying.
Okay.
And I think that's completely changed for this region. Like I mentioned, I've been here for 15 years, but in the past 6-7 years, that has undergone a big shift.
Okay.
So the length of time, because I think people have realized that to get real change, you need to invest that time and that commitment. It's not just time. It's about what you do at Ananda. So that's moved pretty dramatically from what used to be about 5 or 6 days, which is like within the week, to almost like 2 weeks now. And that's the amount of time commitment that people are doing to the comprehensive programs, which are people are coming in for 3 weeks even.
Yeah.
So that's a big shift already.
Amazing.
I think the other thing which I see a lot of change is in how open people are into following something which is very integrated. Ayurveda still forms the key, the window into what they're doing there.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, in the past 2 years, the number of people who've come in from the GCC markets who also want to address, besides their physical health, the mental side of what they're going through. Stress, anxiety, mental health. And all of these definitely are addressed by Ayurveda, but in tandem with that, also through yoga, through meditation. 10 years ago, I wasn't seeing that.
Mm.
You know, the openness towards actually following a complete holistic program.
Right.
Wasn't really that much. That's one change. The third aspect I feel is also the amount of time people are spending post their stay in terms of sustaining and following a program. So we saw that and we started building that into the way our programs are designed. So now after you finish your program, 3 weeks later, we have a follow-up. 3 months later, we have our second follow-up. So and people are constantly writing back and communicating with our teams to actually understand how do they sustain it. Because you can go and do something miraculous anywhere for a week or 2 weeks. The magic is how do you sustain it?
Exactly.
How do you build that into as a daily lifestyle practice? So I see all of these changing significantly. And also another interesting trend, while we've been growing from strength to strength in terms of addressing women's health, and working on many different aspects of women's health, I find it encouraging that we've having a much better response also from men from the GCC markets who are coming into Ananda. So that's a very welcome sign.
Yes.
Amount of self-care
that
men need to also address and take care of.
I think men are usually neglected when it comes to their health, especially mental health and physical health. I mean, focus sometimes shifts, you know, towards the woman a bit more. But I think that's fantastic that you're seeing, a rise in that as well.
Definitely.